You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 114 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, the UK's only sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. It's just me and Pete today to take you through, unfortunately, an absolutely appalling Everton performance away at Crystal Palace. After a great win against Arsenal at a morale boost on Monday, you would have thought that we'd put in a much, much better performance. But yet again, Pete, there's a lot of questions that need to be asked of both manager and players after that performance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think we joked on the last podcast, you know, what Everton will turn up. But I tell you what, I didn't expect the one that we've just seen, because they were awful. It's like two different sides. You know, I was there on Monday night, you know, elated, proud, you know, feeling connected to the team, feeling like we turned a corner, feeling like, you know, we'd answered a lot of big questions, not just on the pitch, but as a football club. And then today, you know, that was shameful. It was absolutely shameful. And I'm sure we'll get onto it, but I think the two big things for me are, number one, the performance on the pitch, and two, some of the decisions that were made in terms of, I think, personnel and how the game was managed. You feel like, as an Evertonian, you don't want to stay in this repeated cycle of getting rid of the manager and calling for the manager's head, and we all know we need stability, but it's really hard not to ask the question, isn't it?
I mean, obviously, we'll come on to the manager shortly. I think it's now is a good time to have that discussion. But like you say, you know, you come away from Goodison Park on Monday on top of the world. You know, what a fantastic goal from Damari Gray, 92nd minute. And you just think any other side would use that as a platform just to push on and kick on and turn a corner. And, you know, we thought today, I know we were missing Alan at a bit of a niggle, and yeah, you mean obviously he's injured again. But Mason Holgate played the majority of the game against Arsenal anyway. But you know, you're still looking at those two sides on paper. For me, we've still got the better individual players, in my opinion. And we were just totally, totally toothless again. I thought we lost a midfield battle, especially first half. Richarlison got absolutely no service whatsoever, and we'll come on to obviously his substitution shortly. Damari Gray was probably our most effective player first half. Had a couple of chances, didn't he, which were of his own doing. And the tactic seemed to be, let's just sit in tight, get the ball to Damari Gray and see what he can try and do. That was how the tactics came across to me, because we looked like he didn't know what we were doing. Mm. There was only one side he wanted to win that game today for me, and it certainly wasn't Everton. Everton were just happy to contain. If we come away with the point, I think the manager would have been happy. I mean, you were saying, Pete, at our time, you found yourself agreeing with what Graeme Souness was saying, which in itself is incredible. And you even had Alan Pardew talking a bit more sense as well because of how poor we were.
Yeah, I don't think that's ever happened in my life, but I thought Souness was spot on. He said, you know, Everton tend to have a way of playing as a football club, and what we saw in the first 45 wasn't it. And it was like we'd come here on a containment mission. You know, you'd think the game plan is, you know, what you'd expect to take to Manchester City, not to Crystal Palace. And I completely agree with you. You know, even with the players and the personnel we've got out, we're better than that Crystal Palace side, and we should be going there and trying to play football. It was just like we repeatedly gave them the ball back and just sat back and tried to soak them up and hit them on the break. And it made no sense. It made absolutely no sense. It just played into Palace's hands. I think after about 20, 25 minutes, there was a stat, 73% possession Palace had. That's disgraceful. You know, and you've got three players in midfield, you know, Delph, Gomez, Decore. I think they probably saw the least amount of the ball out of, you know, all our players on the pitch. It was just bypassing the midfield constantly. I'm not being critical of Decore, but first half, he barely touched the ball. We couldn't get in the game. He was a bit more involved in the second period, but we were just unrecognisable. And I think, like you said, Mike, it's that loss of momentum. You know, we keep looking to turn the corner. And the longer this goes on, you know, the more worrying it gets. I think that what's that, 5 points in 30 out of a possible 30 now?
The run is absolutely, absolutely appalling. And, you know, we've spoken about it at length on previous shows. We found it difficult as time has gone on to defend, you know, the tactics of the manager to defend certain players. You know, when really, you know, we should be going to Crystal Palace, a side who will be lower in the table. They were 14th before today's game, where we now find ourselves, which yet again is absolutely appalling. And we've gone there as if we're playing one of the top four sides. And we've sat off. And I know we play a particular way, but the brand of football is ugly. And it's okay playing ugly football and, you know, doing little niggly fouls and breaking play up and things like that. But our style of football is awful to watch. And we're not winning games. So it's even worse. So if that's the case, you've got to try and do something different. And, you know, it takes until what? Going 2-0 down for us to show any kind of reaction. And you think, well, where was that for the first sort of 65, 70 minutes? Where was it? And that's the biggest concern, because we're seeing it now too often. They always flash up on the telly every single time we go behind about just taking 10 points from losing positions this season. Well, my issue there is, why are we always going behind in games? Why is it taking us to go behind in games to actually react and get something from a game? And, you know, out of 18 points for 10 of them to have been won from being behind in the game, some might say it shows character. For me, that's alarming, because we should never be in that position against some of these sides that we've actually fallen behind to. You know, every time you watch us, you struggle to pick out any kind of positives. And I couldn't find one yet again today. I just couldn't find one, whether it be the players on the pitch, whether it be the manager's tactics. I mean, we can sit here all day and discuss their goal, because yet again we've conceded from a set piece, and it was awful defending for their second goal. The first goal, we give the ball away to Mari Gray. Obviously, we cut him a bit of slack, because he's done well this season, but it's an individual mistake. Coleman also to blame as well. So we're shooting ourselves in the foot. But I've got to come on to, because it's a massive, massive talking point, this. What are your thoughts on the Richarlison substitute situation, Pete? So he brings on Solomon Rondon. Obviously, we're looking for a goal. We're at the time, we were 1-0 down, if memory serves me correctly. So we're looking for a goal, and he takes off arguably our best player after 58 minutes. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think I said to you lads in our group chat at the time, we've got to win the game. When he makes that call, we have to win the game. Otherwise, he's going to be called out on it, and rightly so, because it was absolutely baffling. The Arsenal game, he's got a hat-trick. Fair enough, two of them are borderline offside. But, you know, he wins us that game just as much as Damari Gray does. He was outstanding. You know, the lad on his day is unplayable. He's world class. He's always got a goal in him. So, you know, to haul him off, you know, and bring on Rondon, you know, fair enough, Rondon gets his goal, but yeah, it's absolutely baffling. And surely he must know that people are going to question him for that decision. I know we'll come on to it in a minute, but I've said many, many times on this podcast, you know, when he makes calls like that, they have to go his way. Otherwise, he's going to be questioned on them, and there's no hiding place, is there?
There's not, and obviously we're recording immediately post-match, so we haven't seen any kind of manager comments yet, but he will justify that today in the fact that Rondon scored a goal. So take out the equation, he's lost a match 3-1. He will say, well, Richarlison was ineffective, Rondon's come on and he scored a goal. Now, we're all obviously delighted that Rondon actually got off the mark for us. It's something which I'm sure was weighing heavy on his mind. But if you're chasing the game at 1-0 down, why aren't we putting two up front? Why are we taking off, like you say, a player who scored three goals, probably two legitimate or should have been against Arsenal on Monday, so just a few days ago. Why are we keeping him on the pitch to work alongside someone else, try and get some more service into him? Because we know it's 1-0. Even as the game goes on, if it stayed 1-0 when that substitute was made, the longer it stays like that, the edgier they get anyway. We're going to get more chances to get crosses into the box and push them back a little bit further. So you're going to want bodies in the box, aren't you? When he put his number up, I sat there and literally could not believe what I was seeing. And I think the most concerning part of it all now, Pete, is we've now seen the fans turn in terms of fans in the ground. There were chance of fat Spanish waiter from the away fans, and obviously we're not condoning that kind of chance, but that was what was said from the away fans. There was chance of red and white shite. There was then chance and support of Richarlison. Are you seeing the fans now? You're seeing the fans turning and saying, listen, it's time for you to go, in my opinion. I don't want to, you know, we're going to have a discussion shortly about that. But when that happens, I think it's a long, long way back for any manager. When you're on the run that we're on, despite a morale boosting or supposed morale boosting win against Arsenal a few days ago, when you're on this kind of run and you're putting in those kind of performances and you're setting up that, you know, that way tactically, you've got a long way back to have any chance of winning the fans back over. And for me personally, I just don't see things ending particularly well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think for me, the perfect comparison is Allardyce. And I know I made a joke in our group about Rafa being just a Spanish Allardyce. But, you know, at least with Allardyce, we finished eighth. You know, I can remember going to a home game and watching us beat Newcastle 1-0. I'm thinking this is one of the worst games of football I've ever seen. You know, we played terribly, but it was effective and we won. And we finished eighth that season. So, you know, how do we justify keeping on Rafa making these, you know, really baffling decisions that are arguably losing us games? I mean, they're certainly not winning us games. You know, even the team that started the game, you know, I think I said to you lads, you know, look, this kind of looks like 4-3-3, but then when we don't have the ball, we're all the way back behind the halfway, and I couldn't work out the press side of it. It was like when they had the ball in their 18-yard box, we were being quite aggressive. But then the moment they got beyond that sort of 18-yard, 20-yard line, we completely backed off. And it just seemed like a really strange, unambitious game plan. And I think he is losing the fans, and I think he's losing the players as well. I mean, it's widely known he seems to have isolated or singled out Luca Dean for, you know, potentially one of several reasons that we may come on to. But I think the moment you lose that the connection with the fans, it's a matter of time, isn't it?
100%, 100%. And we've said it time and again, because of his backstory and his history, the pressure's going to be, you know, a lot higher on him when the when we hit a negative patch of form. It's been a long, long time. I was ran now for a good couple of months where we're not seeing us really, you know, turning the corner, and when we should be turning corners and picking up more points than we actually are, we're not doing it. And that's the really concerning thing for me. Has he lost the players? You know, potentially. Like you said, then we've seen the whole Luka Dean situation unfold since the Arsenal game, which we'll come on to shortly. And I just when these things start to happen, combine that with obviously the poor run, fallout with players, Richarlison certainly wasn't happy of coming off today, and I certainly can't blame him for that. Then his position as manager will always be called into question. But I think that the biggest issue we've got along those lines is that Farhad Moshiri appears to have given him all the keys to the castle, so to speak. You know, we're seeing Marcel Brands, who's gone. We've seen, obviously, changes made in the medical department. We're hearing about more changes at boardroom level as well. The manager has admitted that he's going to be responsible for transfers in January, assuming that he's still there. So it's the Mafar machine has given the biggest vote of confidence that he could have possibly done at this particular stage after a really poor run of form. And that's where the concern comes in with me is, you know, because he's said all these things and he's now getting more power, when it comes to asking the question about whether he should still be manager of the football club, is he going to be able to pull the trigger in terms of saying, well, yeah, now your time's up?
And it's strange, isn't it? Because, I mean, this is a worse run than Koeman had. You know, why was it not acceptable for Ronald Koeman? You know, why did Allardyce get the sack? You know, why was Marco Silva not given more time if, for some reason, Rafa Benitez is the man that, you know, everybody seems to put the faith in? It doesn't seem to match up, does it, with history?
No, not at all. And there'll be some that will argue, and I totally get this sentiment, that, you know, we can't keep on hiring and firing managers. We've done it too often since David Moyes left. And it's not the way to go. We're looking for stability. So at the first sign of trouble, should we really be saying it's time to move the manager on? Like you said, the run is absolutely terrible. The brand of football is awful. He's fallen out with players. You know, and it wasn't just Luka Dean who's questioned him, by the way. We saw, obviously, the issue with the Richarlison substitution today. And it's sad, really, because we should be... I know, obviously, we lost the game, but we should be focusing, really, on the key points in the game. And, you know, it's really difficult to do that when you're seeing us in this predicament, and you don't see how we're going to get out of things with a, you know, probably the most difficult game of the season so far to come away at Chelsea. You know, and it's really, really sad. But, you know, all the goals, you look at all the goals that we conceded, they're all avoidable. They're all totally avoidable goals. You know, we've said the two in the first half, the one later on at the end of the game. You see Seamus Coleman trying to be clever and boot the ball at a player, goes through the fella's legs. Andre Gomez gets the ball, gives it away edge of the box, and they score. I mean, yeah, good finish, but shot ourselves in the foot. So three times, it's three mistakes for me. Another set piece where we conceded.
And but the whole thing's sloppy, isn't it? It's sloppy. And no pressure on the ball. You know, the amount of times the ball will pop out and, they, you know, Zaha or, you know, the lad on the other wing could just take a little touch, look up and knock it in. And you just think that's not acceptable.
Of course. We were never, ever in that game on the front foot. We were never looking to exert any kind of pressure. We don't play a press, do we? Everton just don't play a press. It's... You know, we were letting Palace play out from the back. They were in control doing it. They weren't rushed in doing it. I think under Ancelotti, there was times when the players knew when to put it on, and other times they wouldn't. They would back off, but they knew what they were doing in that sense. Whereas now, it's almost as if the players just sort of follow the ball around as it goes across the back four or the back three of the opponents and just follow the ball. They don't really try and chase it down. And, you know, It's a waste of time with us. We just tend to just go long, don't win the first header, and don't pick up the second ball. So what's happening all the time is we're doing that. They're picking up possession, and we're back to square one again, and we're trying to win the ball back. It might go to Pickford, and then the same thing happens again. And it's just there's no semblance of a plan for me. And it was evidence again today. It's, as I say, it was almost as if, let's try and contain them. If we get a draw, then great. And if we go behind, we'll look to try and deal with it from there. And that, for me, is not good enough. It's certainly not good enough for this football club. And despite, as I say, a decent win on Monday, it doesn't hide the problems that we've still got. And the question now is whether the manager is next in line to be moved on. But let's take a short break, Peter, and we'll pick things up in a couple of minutes. Welcome back to the second part of this week's Unholy Trinity podcast. Unfortunately, like we said, it's time to discuss the manager. We've always been, since we started this show in February 2019, we've always very much tried to back the manager. Marco Silva was going through a really, really rough time at that particular point. Stuck at it, stayed on for us another 10 months since we started recording. But we're always think it's important, if we can do, to put a bit of an argument in place for the manager, because things can happen, things can go wrong, things can conspire to go against particular managers. And we know that the current manager has had his issues in terms of injuries to key players, having no money to spend. And that's certainly bought him a little bit of favour in the time that he's been here with some sets of fans, including ourselves. We've been totally keen to push that message and not, you know, hit the self-destruct button too early. We're at the point now, though, Pete, aren't we, where we're probably beginning to question the manager a lot more than we ever have done. And after today's defeat away at Crystal Palace, he hasn't done anything, has he, to really sort of change our minds. And the question of whether he should still be in charge of the club in the foreseeable future is there once again, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he's ticking all the wrong boxes, isn't he? Like you say, he's fallen out with key members of the first team squad, you know, and players who on the day can be match winners, and players that hold, you know, tremendous, you know, transfer value, commercial value for us as a club, which shouldn't be the most important thing, but it you know, let's face it, is very, very important. You don't want to be isolating one of your key assets. The performances on the pitch are inconsistent and generally sloppy every week. He's making strange calls with the team sheet. He's making strange calls with substitutions on the pitch. And now, yeah, he seems to be having a bit of even more of a disconnect with the fans. He had a disconnected initial appointment. I think we made a good start, which took a bit of pressure off him. But since then, I mean, yeah, he's had a bit of bad luck with injuries, but he just doesn't seem to have handled it well on a number of different levels. And, you know, I was fairly critical of some sections of the fan base a couple of weeks ago for maybe not being particularly specific about the protests and, you know, what they want to change. And I think I'm in danger of getting my wish come true, in that I think fans might end up having a very, very specific message of wanting the manager out. And he's not got many more games for me. I mean, I felt if he lost the Arsenal game, that might be a game too far. I think that's the really frustrating thing, isn't it? That we can put in a performance like that and then just seem to like run 10 steps back with the way that we approached the game today. You know, it wasn't even one or two key moments. It was from the off, wasn't it? It was from kickoff, and that's the worrying thing for me.
Yeah, it's totally that, Pete. I mean, combine that with, like we said, you know, in the first part of the show, you know, we look at what's gone on with Luca Dean over the last say 6-7 days. So the manager reports that he wasn't in the Arsenal squad. The squad for Arsenal, not the Arsenal squad, although you might join him in January the way things are going. So he wasn't available. So he could have been selected. So straight away, for me, and I had this discussion on Friday on Radio Merseyside, it was brought up, and I think a lot of blame's been thrown towards Luca Dean. And for me personally, and I said this on Friday, it's not as straightforward as that. As a football club manager, you've got to look to put fires out. So players' managers always fall out. Of course they do. We don't hear about 99.9% of issues that players and managers have. You know, the thrust together in a job. You know, let's think about, you know, people you've worked for over the years. We don't get on with everyone that we've worked for. You know, that's just human nature because we're thrown together to do a particular job. Now, if reports are to be believed and what Paddy Boylan put out for The Athletic was absolutely correct, you know, we've had a quick chat in regards to those who put the article out, if you like, and they confirmed the story was 100% true. You know, there's no issues about that. There was an argument between the two. Dean is questioning the tactics of the manager. He's frustrated that he's been his role has been now made a bit more, well, a lot more defensively than it used to be. So his in the attack there. So it did happen. So we know that for a fact. He's fallen out. They argued in Spanish. And the manager's punished them. Now, I'm not saying that the manager is totally wrong to punish any player. There's no player who's above the law, so to speak. But what you've got to be, you've got to be savvy in how you go about it. So remove him from the training session, fine him, do whatever you want to do. Even if you've removed him from the squad against Arsenal, fine, that's your decision as manager. But in terms of the public, you've got to play the game. You've got to come out and go, a week or two, you know, he was pitched in Paris on the Saturday before the Arsenal game. You can just say, yeah, he's in, got some time off, no problem. And people will buy it. Do you know what I mean? People will buy that situation. What he has done by coming out and not refuting any kind of injury claims and basically saying, oh, he could have been picked, but he wasn't. Straight away, you're adding fuel to the fire. As a manager, you're under pressure. That's the last thing that you want to do. As Rafael Benitez, a former Liverpool manager in charge of Everton, that's the only last thing that you want to do, because fans will look at any excuse to get onto your back when we're on the run of form that we're on, going into a difficult game at home to Arsenal. You don't want to do that. And it was a Tuesday morning. Luca Dean refuted the claims, which I think the club have probably told him to do, to be perfectly honest. I think the club have probably said that to try and make things die down again. If that's the case, why is he not on the squad today? Why is he still not being picked in that squad? Luca Dean makes that squad a lot better than it actually is. So if he's in the 20, we are a better side and we can use him in attacking centre, left back, put Godfrey right back maybe, whatever it might be. And we've chosen, or the manager's chosen not to do that. So you've made an example of him already. Deal with it over the last 5-6 days. Fine him. We saw him back in training on Friday. He was definitely there. So why aren't we picking him? Why is he being so stupid and stubborn as to not put Luca Dean in that squad today? Because I can't ask that question, Peter.
Yeah, it just feels like a power play, doesn't it?
That's all it is. It's as if the owners give me all this power now. I'm in charge. I'm going to make an example of you. You're one of our most high-profile and say, senior players. So what I say goes, yeah, okay, I'm going to leave you out for 2 matches and we'll see how we get on from there. Now, he's saying that he wants Luca Dean to have a little think about, you know, he's got to do what's best for the team. Well, so's the manager as well. You've punished them already. Don't let it run on and on and on.
And it works when you're winning games and when you're winning titles. Yeah, I think Mourinho is the perfect example of this. I think Rafa and Jose Mourinho are very, very similar. I think characters and managers and tacticians. And we've seen Mourinho win titles and freeze players out. You know, they seem to like certain players and certain types of players. And they're the players that get in the team. And they're the players that the sort of squad's built around. And do you know what? If you're winning trophies, then you're hailed as a genius and you're hailed as a, you know, a tough character. And I think I was reading a quote from Gerrard, you know, about the game this weekend. I think he called, you know, Rafa the master of tough love or something like that. And, you know, again, if you're winning matches, then fair enough. But when you're in relegation form, you know, when you're at a club like Everton and you're taking them through, you know, the worst run of form in the history since you know, what is it, 2013, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's untenable. It can't be justified.
There's nothing that can, for me at the moment, I can really justify the manager staying on. And I hate saying it, and I hate, you know, wanting people to be removed from the position. We all knew when he was brought into the manager's role that it was divisive, the most divisive appointment that you could have made at the time. A lot of people say he was the right man for the job, and he's a master tactician. And like you say, you know, tough love that he's famous for. You know, it works for some, not for others. But maybe we needed that. We all said, you know, the signings that were made for what the outlay was, he'd done pretty well, and we started the season well. So when things are going well, people don't question these kind of things, and we get that. But it's always good to assess where teams are at this time of the season. And for us to be sitting 14th, even with the injuries that we've had, now with an almost fully fit squad to pick from, that's not good enough. So even if you look at it on results alone and take out everything else, take out the link, you know, the previous links to our neighbours across the park, take out things that have been said in previous years, take that all away and just strip it back to ultimately, where are we in the table? It's not good enough, is it? So that alone should have the owner, the board, looking at, well, is he really the right man for the job? Now, again, the concerns are, how often are we going to be caught in this loop where we bring someone in and, you know, very, very quickly they're moved on? I mean, this would be a rapid, rapid fire, wouldn't it? If he was moved on, it'd be a really, really quick sacking. But the question is, though, who would you even bring in? Where would you even start to look at another manager? Who would want the job when we're going to go into January with no money again? We're going to go into January with no director of football. We're looking at possibly a couple of loans. We're going to have probably one or two really, really disgruntled players, Luca Dean being one, Richarlison potentially being the second. So who's going to want to come in and take over from a manager? Because I can't think of anyone. I mean, the obvious choice would be Duncan Ferguson. Again, divisive in its own way. Again, isn't it really? Because people weren't too hot on him getting the job last time around. So the question of whether he should be sacked or not is, you know, looking at on in isolation is fine. But then you've got to look at, what do we do if he does go? And I don't even know where to start with that, Pete.
No, and the job is almost starting to feel like something of a poison chalice, isn't it? You know, an aging, fractured squad that's made up of, you know, the tenures of five or six different managers. You know, yet no director of football, financial fair play restrictions that are tightening the transfer purse. Yeah, who's going to want to walk into that? You'd think, other than a staunch Evertonian. And that shortlist would probably be very, very short at this time. However, like we both said, how do you justify keeping on a manager that's picking a team that can't seem to win a football game, and that can be so wildly inconsistent? I mean, I cannot get my head around the difference between Monday and what we've just seen. It makes no sense to me. I do not understand it. And yet, the players have a huge amount of responsibility, but I think, sadly, a lot of it rests with the manager, because it seems like the way they've been set out to approach the game is completely different. And I think what you said about, you know, it's only when we're in a losing position and the players have to find something within themselves, or then have to come forward and then have to fight, that we seem to get something from games. I completely agree with what you said. I think that's extremely worrying. And it's a pattern. And it's a pattern that doesn't seem to show any sign of changing. And when you look back, actually, that's how we won our first game of the season against Southampton. It was a terrible first half. I can remember saying on the podcast, so it was only when we went behind and we had to come out. You know, the Burnley game as well was similar. And, you know, as you start to go over some of these wins and some of these impressive performances, yeah, actually, they've come out of sloppy football. And you're not going to get many of them throughout the season. And then that's relegation form. I mean, I'm looking at the Newcastle game thinking that could be a pivotal match.
But and you never would have thought, looking at the fixtures going into the season, that in December, Newcastle come to town, and we're looking at that as a potential relegation match almost. You know, we're 7 points above the bottom three. There's no guarantees we're going to pick up any more points before Boxing Day. You know, as we said already, Chelsea away, Leicester at home, you know, two difficult games, Leicester with a big win over Newcastle actually today. And you just don't know where, and we've been here already, where the next points are going to come from. And we said we needed to do something this month. And so far, obviously, we got the points against Arsenal. But we've shown the best and worst of ourselves, haven't we, in terms of the last few games. And, you know, it's been Everton all over, in a sense, you know, from the Merseyside derby to Arsenal to that nonsense today. But it's just not good enough. You know, we were built on, you know, we've always been, you know, over the years, a difficult side to beat. And even when we weren't, you know, great in an attacking sense, we put a shift in. And at the moment, the manager just can't get a tune out of the players. And for me, there's a huge issue and potentially even bigger divides in the camp in terms of players, manager, and what they're being asked to do. And it's a shame because we all want the same thing. We all want success. We all want Everton to be a better football club. And that's the biggest concern for me. I mean, you've got to mind you're saying today, Pete, he just said that he took Richarlison off because he had an issue with his calf. His reaction was clearly not Richarlison having an issue with his calf. I know we had a little in the first half. He was down for a little bit, wasn't he? And he got up and he held it. But Richarlison knew he was not going to be, or he knew in his own head, he should not have been taken off the pitch today. He was fine to stay on the pitch. He knew that. And he could have relayed that to the medical staff at any time. I don't need to go off. I'm absolutely fine. Now, the manager, what he's also said, Pete, and this is interesting as well, that basically he was asked about the fans jeering him during the games. Obviously, we mentioned in the first part of the show that fans were shouting towards him and, you know, in a derogatory way and cheering Charleston. He said, basically, they don't know what's going on. And what he's saying is, you know, that Richarlison was injured. That's why I took him off. So there's a little bit of spite there towards the fans. And like I said, when we're getting to this point where fans are going at the manager, the manager's going at the fans, it's very, very difficult to see how he turns this around and how he continues in the longer term as manager at his football club.
Exactly. It's a losing battle, isn't it? The only way that he can turn this around is by winning football matches. And it seems like even then, he's going to be less popular than he was when he was winning football matches at the start of the season, where you'd say the majority of fans were on the fence. You know, it's just so hard, isn't it, when you look at recent history. You know, Evertonian sort of came out and said, look, no offence, but we're better than Sam Allardyce. And you know, he's not the type of character we want as our manager. And also, he's not playing the style of football that we think represents us. I don't think Rafa's going to get much more grace, certainly not from the fans. And then it comes down to the, you know, the board and the majority shareholder in terms of whether they choose to defy the fans. And, you know, again, you'd say a lot of fans have probably moved certainly closer to the fence when it comes to Mashiri and the board recently. And it's starting to feel like a very difficult time where things aren't being managed very well.
Whether you actually trust those in charge to make the right decision as well, whether that be to remove the manager or whether it be to bring in the right person to you know, take over the reins, you just don't know. I mean, the way things are at the moment, so many people have left the roles. The board seems to be getting smaller by the day, and you know, we don't know whether we're going to see a new director of football. All the power seems to have gone to this manager. And my point that I made on Friday was that it's all well and good saying basically the manager's got full control of X, Y, and Z, but what happens if he's removed in two or three matches? So you're now working towards a new structure and a new system. What happens then when he gets removed? You know, you've got to have a long-term vision And is a long term vision pointing dinosaurs to, you know, like an Allardyce and Steve Bruce and people like that to come in and have full operating tools at the club? Well, not for me. And it just looks like a very, very, it's a massive backward step, I think, the way that this stance that the owner is taking. And I think, you know, this concerns of the fans are absolutely right in terms of, you know, we are concerned with what's going on. And I've said it already, communication is appalling. And one thing that I'd like to come out of any kind of fan protest and things like that is communicating with the fans better, because we don't get told a thing. We shouldn't be told everything. Of course we shouldn't, but we should be told something. And one thing that we lack is communicating effectively with fans. Now, whether we see the manager still there in a couple of games' time, I don't know. Results will be dependent. I'm sure when we get to the Chelsea game, you know, that will be, I'm sure, written off in terms of the board and the owner. He won't be thinking, well, if we lose there, he's gone. But the decision will either be made before that game or after the Leicester game for me. Mm-hmm. And that's a kind of short window that we're talking about at this moment in time. Because as much as the owner might think that he's the man for the club, there will come a time, there will come a point where his role becomes untenable. And I think personally that time is around about now. And I think we could see him removed. I really do, at the beginning of this week. But what do you think, Peter? Are we saying in or out?
Well, in terms of what I think the board will do, or what I think should happen.
What you think should happen?
I just think he's reached the point now where I don't think he can turn it around. And you know what? I wish he could. I'd love Rafa Benitez to win trophies and titles with us, but I just don't think, with the way he's handled himself and the way he's managed a couple of key things over the past few weeks, that it's possible. I hate saying it, but I think he does need to go.
I think more and more fans, especially after today, but more and more fans, I think, are now of that belief. And when that happens and you start to get a tsunami of fans thinking a manager needs to go, I think it becomes inevitable at some point in the very, very near future. You know, a shame things haven't worked out, but I think for me, I think if you want to try and get the fans back on board as an owner, as a majority shareholder, after the fan unrest and after the run that we're on, you take direct action. And a direct action, I think, at the moment is to remove the manager. And like you say, don't like to say it, but that's where we are. And if we don't do something, because we can't sack all the players, I say it every single time a manager goes, we can't sack all the players. And I know some of these players have seen various managers off, etc., etc. But you can't sack all the players. We're in an appalling position, and we're in danger. You know, luckily at the moment, there's three sides that have been worse than us over the course of the season so far. But I think the owner has got to take direct action very, very quickly. But we will see what happens before the Chelsea game, of course. I'm sure Benitez will come out swinging even further in his post-match comments. But unfortunately, as I say, we go to Chelsea on Thursday, and we will discuss that after this short break. Welcome back to the final part of this week's Unholy Trinity podcast, where, like I said, we're back in action Thursday. Going to high-flying Chelsea, you know, they've got so many players at the disposal. Everton are disposable, that's for sure. And a side who can turn over any side on any given day. You know, they've got the returning Romelu Lukaku, who's just coming back into fitness. They've won the last game of the weekend, however controversially, in Stafford Town against Leeds United at Stamford Bridge. And they're a side who currently sit third in the table, a point behind Liverpool, and then 2 points behind Man City at the top of the league. And it doesn't get much more difficult, does it, than going to Chelsea with the form that they're in and the form that we're in?
No, it's a nightmare game. It's an absolute nightmare. I think we're almost opposing teams in lots of different ways, really. I was listening to Tuchel talk after the European game about how maybe they fall into a bit of a habit of switching off when they take the lead and allowing teams back into games. And you know, we were saying earlier, you only seem to get a tune out of Everton once we get a shock and go behind. But I just can't see us turning around a deficit against this Chelsea side, because I think they're excellent. I think Tuchel knows how to manage them. He's got them back into the system that they or a similar system to what they were in under Conte when they last won the title. And they're ruthless, and that's the sign of a championship winning side. I think it'll be really, really difficult. I'm really not looking forward to it at all.
Going there though, Pete, against Chelsea, and obviously, like we've said, the high flying, fantastic side. Most difficult place you can really go with the form that we're in. I'm totally in agreement with you. Where I just can't see us going there and laying a glove on them in any way, shape, or form. You know, which we're not going to. If you look at us against Crystal Palace, I would just sat back and wanted to soak it up, and you know, potentially try and hit them on the counter against the Chelsea side with the players that they've got and the form they're in. We can't even do that. You know, I don't even know how we're going to approach the game. I don't know who's going to be available for the game. You know, if Alan's available, he might go back in. You know, Luca Dean, he did say before today's game that he's going to have a chance over the next few weeks. Don't even know if the manager's going to be there is another point. So I go to that game with absolutely no hope whatsoever. And that's really, really sad. I know we've had difficult games since the start of the season. You know, Man City away is a place you go and you think, well, you know, difficult to go to get anything at all. But we'd seen Palace go there and do it a few weeks earlier. You know, even a Merseyside derby at Goodison. Okay, we weren't in great form, but it was a Merseyside derby. So you give yourself a little bit of hope. I've got none going to Stamford Bridge. And my concern is keeping the score down, which is certainly not a way that we should be approaching the game. But after today and the impact that's going to have on the players, the negativity around the manager and obviously substitutions, decisions that were made, he seems to be sort of snapping back at fans. That's just going to rub off on the players on the pitch. And if we keep it down to three, I think that'll be a success, which is a really, really poor way of looking at things. But what do you think, Pete? Do you think we can even go there and have a shot on target? Like Sam Allardyce days where we had a shot on target klaxon?
No, I think it'd take a miracle. I think there would need to be some kind of behind closed doors intervention between Rafa and the squad. And, you know, it would be the performance of the season, no doubt. I hate saying it. I just can't see it. And again, that for me is, it makes me think of, we reached sort of the point of no return with the manager, that we're thinking of approaching a football match, don't care who it's against, and thinking, you know, if we lose this by, less than two or three goals, then that's not too bad. I mean, that's just not acceptable ever for Everton, is it? Yeah, it's awful, isn't it?
It shows you the absolute gulf between both sides, and it's not just us in terms of obviously the gap between the top three and the rest, of course, but in our current dilemma, the gap seems to be bigger than it's ever been in previous seasons, especially. You know, we'd always go there to Stamford Bridge, and I think, you know, we go into the game, I think we've got some kind of chance of getting something from the game if we set up correctly. But I just can't see us setting up in any kind of formation to give us any kind of chance to get anything from the game. And it's just, it's so sad to say that. I hate saying it. I hate us being in the situation that we're in, because, you know, you want to be, and we'll always back the side, and our away support shows it, our home support shows it. We're always there for the players and our team. But we're in such an appalling run of form that it's certainly not going to get better at Stamford Bridge. And if anyone can give me an argument as to how it's going to improve at Stamford Bridge, I'd love to hear it and love to know how we're going to approach that game in a positive way. But I can't see anything more than a Chelsea win. And I'm going to go out there with a 3-0, Pete.
Yeah, no, you plucked the same prediction as me. I can't see us scoring. I can't see us keeping the score down to anything under 2-0. So, yeah, I hate to say it. I think it'll be a 3-0 Chelsea, but I'd love for the gods, the footballing gods, to prove me wrong with it, some kind of Everton win, or for us to get something from the game. But it just constantly feels like we're looking for that reset button. And Rafa Benitez doesn't seem to be able to find it.
Most definitely, most definitely. And like I said to you before we recorded, peace out. Luckily, I'm in a driving movie theatre watching Home Alone on Thursday, so I won't have the stress of watching the game. So there's a positive, you know. If anyone wants to get down to, I think it's called the Riverside Driving Thursday night to avoid the match, I'm sure there's tickets still available. Get your car booked in, and you can avoid the match like me.
Yeah, phone off, Mike.
Phone off, alerts off, everything off, and don't look at the score until we played Leicester. It's probably the best way to go about it. But really sad predicaments, you know. As much as we're joking, you know, I know me and you are absolutely at the end of our tether, and it takes a lot of it, I think, for us on this show to be that way. We do try and be as positive as we can, but listen, it comes to us all, and we've all got a breaking point, and I think we're at that particular point now, unfortunately. Fingers crossed we can put in some kind of performance against Chelsea. Fingers crossed we see some kind of action off the field over the next few days, but who knows. But that's us for this week. Lee will be back next weekend. We'll do a post-Leicester match, your pre-Christmas show. Hopefully we'll have a half-decent Christmas this year. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.